What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast. As usual, with me, I'm your host, Steve Mathis. With me is a guy that maybe some motocrossers may not know much about, but trust me, he's influential in the scene. Eric Sandin of No Effects. What's happening?
Just hanging out. I got a cold. I just douched my sinuses, so there's all kinds of nice runny green stuff down the back of my throat, and I'm having a good time.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks for doing this, man. I know it's a little off my, it's a little out of my wheelhouse, but I've always enjoyed talking to you at the races and always thought you were a cool dude and really thought that people would dig this, so thank you for doing it.
Ah, shucks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Now, for people who don't know, you are the drummer for punk rock band No Effects.
And, yes, I am.
And how long have you been in the band for?
Oh my God! If I say this, it's a badge of honor and a badge of embarrassment at the same time. Almost 30 years. That's
wow.
How old I am.
Yeah.
So think about it. I've been in a band for almost 30 years. So that what makes me about 70?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And again, people don't know the largest selling punk band ever. I mean, what? How do we clarify? One of the biggest ever, right? I mean,
yeah. I don't know if we've sold more records than anybody in the underground punk scene, but we're probably up there. But
yeah,
we're just kind of like the I don't know, like the Grateful Dead of punk rock. Even though those two don't go good together,
right?
We've been doing it for long. We can go all over the world, anywhere we want, and have sold out shows.
Yeah,
including weird third world countries too.
See, that's what I mean. Like I've got friends who know of you, and we'll get to your motocross tie-in in a bit. But people don't understand. Like, you're a rock star. The No Effects is a big band. I mean, yes, it's underground, but yet it's underground yet not. Right? How many records have you sold? How many records have No Effects sold?
To be honest, I have no freaking clue because, I mean, I know that's kind of a weak answer, but we've been together for 30 years, and we have so many records out.
Yeah.
I mean, we really do. We have like, okay, I don't know, 15 or 18 full-length releases. I'm not joking. We probably have 75, like, little one-off things here and there. It's really hard for me to tally them up, but it's definitely way in the millions.
I just typed in Wikipedia,
mm-hmm.
and you've released 12 studio albums, 15 EPs, and you've sold over 6 million records.
Wow. That's a lot.
Congratulations.
I don't know. What's wrong with us, man? It's like we're a bunch of little gerbils on speed. We can't stop doing it.
Yeah, really. How often do you tour? I've long ago haven't bought a No Effects record, so I don't know how many you guys have gone out with. I usually download the songs here and there. How often do you tour?
Tour quite often. I mean, I got home Monday night from Europe. I was in Europe for 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then prior to that, I had 3 weeks off, and then I was in Europe for 3 weeks to that. you know,
yeah.
This summer I've been to Europe twice for 2-3 week runs.
Right, right.
I'm off until the middle of December, and then it starts all over again for the first like 6 months of the year.
Yeah, yeah. One thing about punk bands, man, you guys, you're just road warriors, all of you guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like that helps you sell the records because your fans are so devoted, and they know they'll see you every year at least. You know?
Well, it's
in America, anyways.
First off, record sales are crap these days because the internet, you know,
right,
pirating and all that kind of shit.
Yep.
So in order for us to subsidize our income a little bit, we have to tour a lot more, you know, because we can, you know, sell merchandise and tickets and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's what we do, man. We love it. We love touring. It's that's where the rush is for me, is playing live and going to places. And, you know, like, on this last run, we just did 2 or 3 shows in Russia, you know, and that was really cool, you know, going to places where not a lot of bands get to go. Next year, we're going to Vietnam. Like, who says they get to go to Vietnam? That's what's special to me, is going to places where other bands haven't been, or the local people don't get to see bands that often.
Right, right. God, I don't even want to ask this question, but is there a favorite concert tour or concert place ever? Is there anything like that? You know,
is
it Winnipeg, Canada? Just ask me that. Just tell me that.
Canada's awesome, man. Those stupid Canucks—they really do know how to come out and have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
I
know, it's kind of like asking. I mean, you've just been everywhere, done everything, so it's like, how do you even remember, right?
No, I mean, like, Australia is a really good place.
Is it?
Europe's a good place.
Yeah.
Parts of Europe I don't really like so much, but it's a good place. Canada's a good place. Japan, I mean, it's all good places, but there's like, I don't like Spain that much. I don't like Italy that much. But, you know, I like Sweden and Norway. I don't know what it is. It's just my personal preference.
Right, right, right. And does it get old to you, Smelly? Like, is it kind of like, oh God, here we go again. I got to play these songs, you know, the same songs over and over.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm on stage, I get a little bored. Sometimes, because I'm like, Not so much from the show itself, but it's like, all right, this is the 15,000th time I've played the same song, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, man, I really love what I do, and I'm grateful I won the lottery, and I'm not, you know, I'd like to think that I'm pretty humble about it, and I got a blessed life, man. I got really, really, really freaking lucky to be able to make a living doing what I really want to do. It's work, but it's not my job.
Right.
No, wait. It's my job, but it's not work. Something
well,
like that.
I can sort of relate. I'm really lucky to do what I do. You know what I mean? It's my job, and I'm super busy, but at the same time.
Right. When you were a kid, you know, when you were a kid, you were into motorcycles, right? Now, look, you're making a living in the motorcycle world.
Yeah, 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 exactly. If somebody told me, hey, you know, all those magazines you read each and every month, yeah, you're going to write for some of those, I would have been like, no. No way.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I was you, I would probably would have thought, you know, I saw that video of you racing when you were about, I don't know, 13 years old, maybe on 85.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought maybe you'd be professional by now, or retired professional, but it looks like journalism was your calling.
Yeah, thank you. Eating or journalism, one of the two. Hey, I think one of your songs are on a video game I have of NHL on my PlayStation. Do you guys?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's one of your guys' songs. I need to figure that out. Do you know anything about that?
You really are Canadian if you have NHL on your PlayStation.
Oh, yeah, you know I do. You know I do.
God. No, you know what, to be honest, I don't know anything about that kind of crap.
The checks just flow in.
As big as they are.
Yeah, the record industry has changed a lot. I mean, it is just an American Idol world right now. You know, bands that used to count on selling, you know, double gold albums or double platinum, it doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, not really, man. With the internet and with MTV and with all these
singles, buying singles, I guess you can do.
Yeah,
right?
That's what it is. Before, like, it would be like you bought a record and it was like buying a book. You listen to it from start to finish and you'd pick and choose which chapters or which songs you liked and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Now everything is so flash in the pan, so in your face, so like ADD. Like this song, you like, you know, it's like one song at a time or a piece at a time. There's no more record sales. Like, record sales, for us, we used to release a record in the United States, it would go gold,
right,
which is a half a million in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're selling 150,000, 200,000 copies. I mean, it's like, it's really, really squashed the sales of things because everybody is so ADD and all the information is out there for free because you can download it and stuff, that it's really, really changed, and there's no beating it, man. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, yeah, and it goes from, you know, acts like U2 to NOFX, really. It's the same.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. And it really does. I mean, it's the record industry, record stores and record labels are closing at a record rate.
Like,
you know, like the warehouse and Virgin and all that stuff. They're closing their doors because they're not selling products anymore.
Yeah, who's the one that just? Oh, Tower, all gone. Tower Records gone.
Yeah, there's no more products. Yeah, you know,
it's crazy. And you were just on tour with Guns N' Roses. You told me.
Well, we just played two shows with Guns N' Roses.
How did that ever come together? That's a little weird, a little unique.
Yeah, a little weird. There's these annual festivals in England called mm-hmm. Reading and Leeds. They're two different festivals. They're like the biggest festivals out there.
I heard of them, yeah. Reading for sure is big, yeah.
Yeah, they're the same festival in two different places. Reading's like on one night, and then Leeds is on one night. They're two different areas, so the package just moves.
Yep.
And we just happened to be on the same show as Guns N' Roses, and boy, those guys were terrible.
Really?
Axl Rose is such a freaking rock star, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've seen some shenanigans in my life.
Yes, you have,
When he pulled in, first off, they were an hour late going on stage the first night.
Shocker.
Yeah, no joke, right? And that's actually pretty good because I've heard stories of him being 3 hours late.
Yeah,
you know? But he pulled in with like a caravan of limousines with like CIA guys kind of running next to it, you know, the black suit guys with earpieces.
Yeah.
Cleared out all of the backstage area. Like, if you were in a band that just played, like, such as us, because we were pretty much, like, you know, we were a couple bands underneath it.
Yeah.
Everybody had to leave before Axl took the stage, and just all this.
Oh, my God.
All this just, like, power-tripping bullshit. It was so weird.
I read a book about them, and it was unauthorized, of course, but I don't know how accurate it was, but good God, did he lose his mind around the Use Your Illusion tour. Like, just, he lost it. And the funny thing is he really can't still act like that. I guess maybe he's still loaded, but I mean, you know.
I mean, he has a lot of money for sure. But the thing is that's what's kind of making them the enigma that they are now. Is just weird behavior because people just want to see what he's going to do. That's why I stuck around just to see what kind of bullshit he was going to pull. I'm friends with those guys in that metal band Avenged Sevenfold.
Yep.
And last year they went on tour with him, or maybe the year before last. Mm-hmm. They went on tour with him in Europe, and the singer told me this one story. Avenged Sevenfold was their direct support, which means the band right underneath Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
When they left the stage, when their set was done, this was in Spain. Axl hadn't even left England yet on his private plane.
Oh, my God.
Like Guns N' Roses was supposed to be on stage in a half an hour.
Yeah, yeah. He's in England.
Axl's still in England, not even on a plane.
Right. Oh, man. I know as a 16-year-old kid, I saved up a bunch of money to spend $75 to go see them on the Use Your Illusion tour in Canada. Couldn't wait. My favorite band ever. Blah, blah, blah. He's an hour and a half late. He comes out. He sits on the drum riser and doesn't move for a good 45 minutes. Doesn't move.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Sits on the drum riser with the microphone in his hand and just sings the songs as if he was reading a book. And I was like going, what the hell? This is my $75 I spent. And,
the guy's kind of has he has some issues.
Yeah, definitely. But okay, let's get back to NoFX. Although I'd love those stories. One last story: the guy who does sound for Supercross, Maxi, was his personal vocal engineer, sound engineer for for many years.
And for who?
For Axl.
Oh, okay.
And says he fires everybody left and right all the time.
Yeah. There's a revolving crew. Our crew guys was talking to their crew guys and. The crew guys from Guns N' Roses were saying, oh, Axl's such a piece. Even the guys in this band, Axl's a piece of shit. Fuck that guy. That guy's a fucking asshole. Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, yeah, people are fired every single day because he's such a wacko.
Yeah. Jesus.
Enough Axl.
Yeah, enough Axl. NoFX, going strong still. Do you see an end to it? Are all you guys cool? Do you have fights? I mean, you got to be just looking at each other like going, what? You know, you again? Like, when's this thing going to end?
Well,
or is it?
I remember, like in 1989 or 1990, in some interview, somebody asked me the same question. So how long do you think you guys are going to continue going for?
Right.
And at that time, in 1989 or whatever it was, I was like, oh, man, I don't know, another 3 or 4 years? You know, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward 20 years since then, 21 years since then.
Yeah.
It's like we're still going strong, stronger than ever and stuff.
Yeah.
There's no end in sight. I mean, it's really weird. It is really freaking weird.
Yeah.
We all get along really well. We're all really good friends. We all, like, we respect each other's boundaries, and there's no issues with us personality-wise.
Uh-huh.
And we're all having fun. I mean, there's no reason for us to quit.
Yeah.
We're still selling records, sort of. We're still...
selling out clubs and...
Selling out shows wherever we go, man. We're selling out shows.
Yeah.
There's no reason to stop, man. And We're having a good time. That's the main thing. That's why we've been together so long, is because we really enjoy each other's company and we really enjoy what we do.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's good. Yeah. And how much input do you have in new songs? Like, how much collaboration is it, or is it all Fat Mike, the lead singer? Or?
Yeah. Mike writes every single, like, Mike writes all the music and all the words.
Oh, he does? And wow. Yeah.
Yeah. He writes everything. So I just show up, you know, I show up when I show up. And he goes, all right, dude, play drums for, you know, this part, this part, this part. I'm like, okay, cool.
Right.
I got the best gig in the world. I don't gotta write anything. I just show up and hit the drums for a while, and then I get a paycheck.
Nice. How'd you get good at drumming? Just through kid, like when you were a kid, just like
It just kind of came naturally. It was really weird. When I started playing, I don't know, I was like 15 or so, and there were some kids down the street that wanted to start a punk band.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. I'd like to be in the band. And they said, oh, we need a drummer. It could have just as easily been the jaw harp or the bass or whatever it was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I went and bought a shitty-ass drum set, and I just taught myself, and it came pretty easy.
That's cool.
I've never had one lesson in my life.
Right.
I taught myself, you know, and not toot my own horn, but I feel like now I'm playing better than I've ever played in my life.
Yeah.
Right now at this stage. Yeah, it's really weird.
Is it like, I imagine, it's not like racing where you're practicing during the week, right? I mean, you literally go months without picking up drumsticks?
Oh, yeah. There's some people like Jordan. Jordan from Strung Out, like, he practices all the time. Like, he'll go into his room and play for six hours a day, you know? I'm off until December. I literally won't pick up a drumstick until 3 days before I go into it, and then I'll play for about a half an hour.
You're ruining all my stereotypes.
I swear to God, man. I mean, it's not rocket science. I got the same beat. The hardest thing to do for me is, like, when I get back on tour, it's just the stamina. It's just getting back into shape, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it comes. You know, I as they say, I'll play myself into shape. In the motorcycle world, you race yourself into shape.
Right. And then I saw that thing on TV that you guys did on, I think it was on Fuel?
Fuse
backstage thing. That was super interesting. Man, it really opened my eyes. Like, I've known you for a long time. I worked for you in 2002 as a mechanic. And I knew you were, you know, a punk rock star, underground star. But sweet Jesus, in those countries, you guys were losing their minds over you guys. It was like the Beatles or somebody. Right?
It's weird, man. Like, yeah, it's like weird when you pull up to Jakarta in Indonesia and there's 7,000 kids to see you. You know, they don't speak any English, and I definitely don't speak any Indonesian, you know. It's a rush.
People got to see that. If they can check it out, it's on Fuse. And
you can buy it on iTunes now. It's called Backstage Passport. We documented.
Yeah.
We traveled over a two-year period. We went to 6 of the 7 continents in the world, and we played all kinds of weird places just to see what would happen.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was funny, though. A bunch of the clips were you sitting on the couch going, nobody cares about the drummer. Nobody cares about the drummer.
I mean, we would pull up to an airport, and everybody would go mob the three front guys, and I'd be sitting in the back picking up bags from baggage claim, you know?
So funny, and it was like, it happened constantly.
It happened for, you know, 17 years up until that point. Now the joke's on me. Now everybody thinks it's funny to come up to me and go,
Because of that?
Now it's kind of getting old.
Because of that show?
Yeah, anybody who's seen the show thinks it's funny to go, you know, to do the opposite and go overzealous and give me hugs and kisses and touch my wiener in funny places.
Hey, Tommy Lee, he gets recognized, so maybe it's just you. Now let's talk about the motocross tie-in. In 1990, end of 1996, you, Jordan Burns, drummer for Strung Out, like you said, and Kurt Haller, who was a filmmaker, and I don't really know how you know Kurt, you guys decided to get into Supercross Motocross with Moto Triple X. How did that all come together?
Well, what happened was, you know, coming from the punk world, there's like skating videos and there was like snowboard videos that was actually documenting the lifestyles other than just some guy like skating down a hill or snowboarding down a hill.
Right.
You know, show the guys partying. You know, like the funny, cool stuff.
Right.
So at the time, like maybe 1993, me and Jordan got the idea. It's like, man, these motocross videos just suck. You know, it'd be like the Professor Bailey, how to jump, you know. You know what I mean? It was like all technical stuff, and it was all really dry and boring and lame. And we had the idea of, like, let's incorporate, like, the skate world and the punk world and make a motocross video, you know?
Right.
So we started Moto Select. We started filming, and I guess it would be 93 or maybe 94, but mm-hmm. I think 93. We started filming with the idea of, like, chicks and fights and booze,
yeah.
and maybe a little bit of motocross, you know, make it fun.
Yeah.
And pretty quickly we realized we suck at filming. We have no idea what we're doing.
Right.
And this is going to be terrible. So Jordan was friends with Kurt, and Kurt had been making snowboard videos for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought Kurt aboard, said, all right, dude, you're the boss. You know how to do all this shit. And he came in, and then we really, you know, like, got down to business and started
yeah.
filming the first Moto Triple X. And that was coincidentally the same time, and it's completely coincidental, the same time as the Crusties.
Oh, it was. And, it was, huh? You didn't know much about it? You didn't know anything really?
No, I didn't,
yeah.
we didn't know anything about it.
Right, right.
Didn't know, I swear to God, like, I hadn't caught wind or anything about
uh-huh.
it. And I remember one night I was over at Metzger's house instead of the night, and he's all, dude, check out this teaser. And he had, like, a little 30-second clip of the initial Crusties thing that they had given him, and it was all in the same time, and it was the same idea and format.
Yeah.
Which actually was pretty cool, you know? It was,
yeah.
it was good for us because it kind of, like, you know, gave us some validity, I guess. So anyways, the video came out. We worked for a couple of years. The video came out. We're really happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And Deegan came to us one day. He's like, look, I can't get a ride for next year. What do you say we start? What do you say you guys start a team and I'll race for you? I'll promote, you know, we'll promote the videos and the name and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
That just got the ball running.
Yeah.
Or rolling, I should say. And that was... Oh, God. I was probably like 96 because I guess 97 was our first season.
I always thought the video came out like the same time as the race team, but no, it was the other way. Video was first.
The video came out about a year first because that's how we financed the race team.
Yeah, I was going to say, back then, I mean, Crusty, from what I hear, the Crusty series made the founders pretty well off, and I imagine the Triple X, early Triple X videos, you guys made some cash on those. They sold a lot of copies, didn't they?
Yeah, they sold a lot of copies. We made a lot of money, but every single penny,
right.
and I'm not lying, I've never taken a paycheck from it, every single penny went into the race team.
Yeah.
Nobody got paid.
Right.
Kurt gave himself a little bit of a salary to run it because he was doing the day-to-day operations,
right.
and me and Jordan would tour all over the place, you know?
Right, right.
So if we would have never started the race team, which I'm really happy that we did because,
right.
it meant, you know, but if we would have never started the race team, I mean, we probably have some serious money right now.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There was some in those days, those videos, they sold. They flew off the shelf.
Yeah.
And so you were like, okay, Deegan, all right, we'll help you. And there you go. And then you went racing. You got Kenny Watson, which, God help us all.
Yeah, no shit, right? You know him as well as I do. No shit.
Hey, do you even know that he does a radio show with me every Monday night?
Yeah, I do, but I've never seen it, but I've heard nothing but good things.
Oh, yeah. The guy's classic, as you know. He's just classic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he is, but do you guys got a bullshit meter on the microphone?
Oh, God. Well, he's already told a couple stories that involve other people that were actually him. That he didn't want to make himself look bad. But anyways, yeah, so Watson was the team manager / mechanic, and you went out with...
We had Swink, too. We got Swink to wreck.
Yeah, Brian Swink and Brian Deegan, and Moto Triple X was born. And, man, it was kind of crazy, like, because I was working for Birdwell back then, and
mm-hmm.
so I was around you guys, and, God, the crowds and the people were just going nuts. I mean, it was a success, maybe not financially, the race team, but it was a success as far as buzz, huh?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, at that time, the motocross industry was, there was still a lot of mullets going on. There was still
yep.
a lot of, like, you know, it was just serious kind of backwoodsy, you know? And then we brought in this element of, like, look, this is, you know, we brought in that element of, like, this is fun. Let's have a freaking party. And you know, I don't know. Like, we just brought in this party element to it. And it did instantly, we were like a fan favorite in the pits because we got big giveaways and we weren't our stuffy corporate like Yamaha and Kawasaki and all these people. And the AMA were really stuffy corporate too. Like, this is the way you act, this is what you do, and if you don't act this way, we're going to park you far away, you know, in the
yeah.
corner of the pits.
Oh, God, yeah.
And we just kind of said, you know what, screw it. We're here for the fans, and we're here because we're not going to really win a lot of races, but we're going to have a good time and people are going to remember us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you probably know, because you still are an avid fan and you still go to the races, what you guys did in 97 is exactly what goes on now, and everybody loves it.
Yeah, you know, it was really weird, too. As, you know, we'd have big giveaways, and we'd have girls, and we'd have music going and all this stuff, and it was really fun and exciting, and we had barbecues and give out food and stuff. But financially, it was draining us. Like, you know, for every dollar we'd bring in, we'd spend $2, you know?
Right.
But it really made a name for us, and it really, really, like, hammered us down as a legit team as compared to a lot of other privateer teams that were coming up at the time that would kind of come and go, and no one would even notice them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, it was really, really exciting for me to be involved in the process, and being in a sport that I love, and then being like a centerpiece, I guess, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it was insane.
Did you ride? Did you race? I don't even know.
Well, this is my story. When I was a kid, I grew up, and I was really into it, man. But my parents never supported me with it. They didn't have enough money, and I never, you know, I had like a little Honda QA50 when I was like 7 or 8 or something, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I would go to the store and I would literally steal motocross action, shoplift it, and then go to my house and just stare at the pictures for hours, like Danny Chandler and like Jeff Ward. I remember I used to buy Mini Cycle magazine and the pictures of Jeff Ward in like 77, you know.
Yeah.
And I used to just stare at these pictures and just put myself in their shoes, pretending I was them. But I never got any support from my parents through that. So when the band first started making, when I started making a living, fast forward to like 1992, I bought my first bike, pretty much. I bought a CR125.
Oh, okay.
And then I started racing right away. And I started racing and, you know, trying to do that. And I was never really any good at it. I was okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then real quickly, I began meeting, like, all the factory riders, and I became friends with everybody. So I kind of, like, was no longer outside looking in. I was inside looking out, and it was really, really cool to me.
Yeah, yeah, oh, that is cool. You're right. And then you met Jordan. You guys, they probably opened for you?
I actually had known Jordan for 10 years prior to that.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've known Jordan since the mid-'80s.
Oh, wow. Did he have hair?
Yeah.
Do you have hair?
Yeah. Jordan had hair. He had a long ponytail.
Nice.
And he had a ponytail up, and he would have it braided. But if he didn't have it braided, it was the biggest afro in the world. He looked like he just came off of, like, Survivor or something.
Nice, nice. So you guys go out there. You get – I mean, Deegan and Swink were name riders. And lo and behold, Deegan wins a race. That was was nuts, huh?
Yeah, the first race for
Coliseum.
Coliseum won.
Yeah.
The first lap of the main event – Deegan got a crappy start, and he was, like, I don't know, back of the mid-pack, and he jumped the triple. This is the first lap of the main event of the first race.
Yeah.
He jumped the triple and landed on some dude who didn't jump it.
Yeah.
And he landed. Do you remember that? Did you see
no,
that?
I don't remember. I mean, I was there, but I don't remember it now.
Oh, my God. It was the gnarliest. I mean, he landed straight down on this guy's back, and Deegan just fell straight onto his back and the back of his head. And me and Kurt were looking at each other. And at that point, we had $50,000 invested into the team at that point, you know, race.
Yeah.
And I looked at Kurt, and I'll never forget this, and I go, well, there goes $50,000. He goes, yep. Deegan goes off to the hospital. They say he has compressed vertebrae, all this stuff. He shouldn't fucking race.
Right.
The very next weekend, he goes out there and wins it, but he doesn't just win it. He comes from behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and he passed all those guys, and he just took off, man. And for me, like, wanting to, like, you know, growing up pretending, but just fantasizing I was in the sport, I actually felt like I won that race.
Yeah.
How high I was that night.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was, you know, it was nuts.
It was, yeah, it was huge.
And of course,
that just put us on the map, that first one.
Yeah, and of course, he ghost rode it too, which is infamous, you know, and from there, you guys were on. And I know firsthand that the AMA, Duke Finch back then, he was out to get Watson. He was out to get Watson. What do you remember from some of those AMA battles? Like, I mean, that you were kind of off to the side laughing at, but
Duke had a hard on for us.
I know.
From the very first race, like, we were handing out stickers and stuff like that. He would come up and go, you guys can't hand out stickers. But in the meantime, Factory Kawasaki, what are they doing? They're handing out stickers.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, all right, if you guys hand out stickers, we're gonna fine you because people were plastering them all over. You know, the guy was just a fucking asshole. I'm glad he's gone. He was a fucking short little Barry Gibbs looking motherfucker with that funny beard.
He did look like Barry Gibbs.
Yeah, you know, and And he just had a fucking boner for us.
Right.
And so Deegan won the race, and yeah, he goes for the bike, and okay, sure, I understand the fine there, because it's putting people into danger, right?
Yeah.
So he fined Deegan, not sure how much money, it might have been all of the purse money.
Yeah.
Which was $2,500.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at BTOsports.com.
But then some fans, I don't know, they just sent us a check,
yeah,
to reimburse us, which was fucking ungoddamn believable.
I heard that, and it's a true story, right? Yeah, true story. I heard it, yeah. But yeah, didn't know if it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We got some people reimbursed, like you know, hey, yeah, man, that's great, you guys won. Shame that the AMA is such assholes. Here's the money instead. Take
right.
it from us. We're
right.
happy, you know?
Right.
We're happy you won. So anyways, from that point on, every single race, if it wasn't one thing, it was another. Duke was coming around, like checking our credentials all the time, seeing
yeah.
if they're fake or real,
yep.
parking us in the weirdest spots, finding us for every single little thing that there is.
Big sticker fiasco. They found a sticker on a urinal. I remember one time it was, oh, God, they were just...
Yeah, there was another time when they found a sticker on the back of a seat in a stadium, and wanted to charge us money, wouldn't allow us to do the giveaways. I mean, just
yeah.
whatever you could think of that we were doing.
Yeah.
No matter if we're flying straight or not,
right.
Duke was on our ass.
Which of course made Kenny and Jordan do even more dumb stuff.
You're right, it did. I mean, you know, it's one of those things.
They get on the box van, throwing out CDs. I mean, man, I just listened to that Moto Triple X soundtrack. Like, I don't know, 4 days ago, 5 days ago. It reminded me to call you again because we had talked before.
Uh-huh.
And that thing still holds up. That's just still really holds up to me. I don't know.
No, cool, man. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, the video was great. You know, I mean, you know, you guys and Krusty were raising the level, and
mm-hmm.
the videos were coming out. How much, like, I know you were basically kind of a hands off owner, but how much input did you have? Did you talk about riders and did you talk about filming
oh, yeah.
and all that?
Yeah,
I mean,
I was hands off in the day to day operations. I was hands off in getting sponsors and
yeah.
and cutting paychecks and all that stuff. But when it came down to decisions, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know,
yeah, yeah.
End of the season, we talked about like who looks good, who do we want, who can we afford. When it came to videos, like I was out there at 90% of the video shoots. I was there editing the videos with everybody.
Oh, okay.
And it was just the day to day and running the shop is what I didn't do.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, okay. I didn't even know how much, yeah, if you were, you know, somewhere else on tour or God knows what.
No, man, I remember getting on the phone, calling up factory guys that didn't have a ride for next year, going like, hey, man, yeah. we don't got no money for you, but you want to come ride for us? You know, like, you
right.
know.
Well,
I was in there trying to do it.
Generally, the deal was the riders kept the gear money, didn't they? Is that how it kind of worked for you guys?
Well, yeah, yes and no. It just depends because we got O'Neill. O'Neill came along.
Yeah.
At first, and was like, here's X amount of money for the team, but they all have to wear O'Neill. But then it switched. It kind of switched every year.
Right.
O'Neill was kind of a pain in the ass to work for, anyways.
Was there? So let's recap some of the riders. I mean, there's Swink and Deegan, Metzger, Paul Curry, James Eichel for a little bit.
Oh man, what's up, Michael? He's in prison, huh?
He's in prison, man. Yeah, he robbed the bank right down the road from his house.
What a fucking dumbass. Okay, so we had Preston, Harrington,
Lewis,
Ward,
Larry Ward, yeah, Nick Way,
Nick Way, Tim Ferry,
Sorby, Summy.
Who was it? Wait. Who's that guy from Oklahoma? Whatever. I think his name, he works for Goodyear now. He's a tire tester.
Oh, Styles.
Clark Styles.
Yep.
Is it Goodyear? No,
yep.
Dunlop. You know, I'm sure there's 100
Summy.
More that
Was there one guy you wanted to hire that you were close to and it never happened for whatever reasons, like somebody big? I mean, was it?
We were trying to get Hamblin one year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there is. Dude, it's been so long since I can't even remember. We were talking to everybody at all times. We tried getting Matt Walker when Matt Walker was hot, you know?
Yeah.
And
Stalker would have been down with it.
Yeah, but he won a little too much money. I was just psyched when we got Larry Ward. I was psyched when we got Nick Way and Ferry. You know, like, those guys were proven fast guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, let's think about Moto Triple X. 11 years? 13? How many? 13?
How many seasons?
Yeah. 13?
97 was the first one, I think, right?
Yeah, 97.
And then when did you and Jordan have that blowout? Was it last year?
2 years ago, I think.
So
whenever Alan packed it up, I considered it the end of an era.
You're right. 97, so what, 2 years ago? So 2008. So
11 years.
Seasons?
Yeah, 12 years, yeah. 12 years, and think of all the teams that have come and gone in those 12 years. Well, you know, you've been in the pits, you know?
It's really weird. That's one thing that I'm really, really proud of, is that we actually lasted, and we lasted throughout good years and bad years, epic years and years where we just, you know, barely hung on there, and we did it, and we kind of
Damon Huffman,
did it on our own
about,
terms.
Forgot about Damon, you know? Huffman. Yeah, he should have won the World Supercross title. Damon Huffman.
Oh, God, fucking Huffman, what's up with that? Right? I mean, he hurts his ankle, and I understand he hurt his ankle, but, man, we just missed out on a World Supercross.
I know.
If he would have raced, like, just one more race and he's got a couple points, he would have won.
Alan Brown still really regrets that, because if he just would have toughed it out a little bit, he only needed some, like you said, he only needed so many points, so.
If he would have just, like, made a couple more mains and just rolled around in 19th place, you know, that could have been it.
Absolutely. I mean, just think in 97 when everybody walked by your pits in the industry and went, whatever, you guys are clowns, you know, see you later. And there you are, 12 years later, still putting out, you know, great results. Yeah. And think about, you know, Nick Way went from your team to a factory team. Tim Ferry went from Motor Triple X to a factory team. You know, Kyle Lewis, top privateer. Larry Ward won a race.
Larry Ward won a race and hit the podium another time, I think.
Well, dude, there was, when I worked for Nick Way in 02 at Washougal, Larry got second, Lewis got third, and Nick Way got fifth. Like,
yeah, that's, how insane is that? And
I know.
We're in by two punkers and a snowboarder guy, that we are, in our classes, the top of the class.
Yeah.
On privateer stuff that we're, you know, scrapping just to get by.
Right. Yeah, no, and as a mechanic on that team, trust me, it was a greater feat. It's a major accomplishment that I'm still proud of to this day. And also, Sean Ulikowski, who went on to a factory job, was a mechanic. Gothic J, Dave Dye, Alex, myself, Alan Brown.
Look at Roadblock. Look at Kyle.
Roadblock, and now works at Pro Circuit. I mean, you can go on and on. The number of people that have worked at Triple X and gone on to do good things in the industry is also huge, you know? I mean,
it's kind of weird. Like, you look at most of the factory mechanics, and they work for us at one point or another.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and this is all started from a box fan in 97 with Deegan and Swink, you know? Just incredible. It's just a cool story that I should write about it one day, now that I think about it.
You know, I'm kind of sad the way it just you know, the economy took a shit, and we just couldn't do it anymore. And so I'm kind of sad the way it went out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, all good things must come to an end, especially if you don't have any money, it can't happen, you know?
Yeah. Like, was there talk of you guys putting in more money and doing a bigger effort ever, or was it just not there? It just wasn't going to happen.
It just wasn't there, you know? I mean, and Alan had sacrificed a lot. Kurt had sacrificed a lot in terms of time and money.
Yeah.
And me and Jordan, I mean, you know, I wasn't there for the day-to-day operations, so I didn't really feel like it was my place to tell them what they could and couldn't do, or what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it ended. It had its run, and it ended, you know?
Yeah, but definitely you're proud of it. You have to be.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm really, really, honestly, truly proud of it. You know, it makes me feel good, or made me feel good, when I would open up, like, a Racer X, and Davey would have a little shout out to us. Moto Triple X, the longest running, most successful privateer team in history.
Yeah.
How gnarly is that? I'm just a dumb, poor kid that grew up listening to punk rock, and now I'm an owner of the most successful privateer team in history.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. And I like to tell people about it too, and write about it also. I feel like, I mean, there is, if you add up the teams that came and went in the 12 years, there's a lot. And, you know, I'm glad.
Yeah, and there was a lot with a lot of money behind them too, and they just, you know, you know, like they just didn't do it. They just, yeah. I don't know if they didn't have passion for it, the balls for it, or whatever it was. If it was more of a business venture for them, because for us it wasn't about business, it was about racing. It was about making videos and then paying for the race team because we love the sport.
Speaking about those videos, now Triple X, obviously the original one sold well. Triple X 2 probably sold well. Sort of just the decline in videos, huh? Like just the market, the what happened to videos? Like they're gone now.
Well, yeah, the market. It got oversaturated.
Yeah.
Every Yahoo,
it did,
like, oh, this is the new thing, and started making these videos. Remember, there were some fucking horrible ones out there, you know, and it just oversaturated the market. And when there's, you know, so much out there to buy, people just stop buying.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You're right. That was a shitload.
You know, I mean, there were some really, really bad ones. And the thing is like, when Us and Crushies came out, and then, like, SMP came out, and then maybe, like, LBZ one came out, like, you know, that was fine, you know?
Right.
But then when every, I mean, you go to a race shop, and there'd be a whole shelf of extreme motocross videos.
Yeah.
You know, and it always just gets lost in the wash.
Yeah, no, you're right. I guess that's just what kind of happened. It's a real shame. I mean.
Yeah.
Because you got to think there's still a market. Like, if someone came out today with something, it would... Well, I guess Transworld has videos, so...
Yeah, and you know, but now Transworld has videos, but now it's, like, more of the Nitro Circus kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. And also, too, like, did you guys get in hot water for some of that stuff in that video from either a parent or, you know, a team? Or, like, there was some edgy stuff on that first Triple X video.
There was some edgy stuff, and then, you know, we definitely, like, Duke... Again, would say, you know, you can't give that away because there's this and that, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't remember any kind of, like...
No,
any kind of, like, really, like...
Right.
Scandalous stuff coming from it, no.
Hey, let me ask you this. Were there different points in time where you had to reach in your pocket and put some money in the team, or did the team kind of...
Absolutely.
It did? Yeah, you did? It didn't self-sustain itself every year?
No, I mean, there was times, I mean, each of us had to kick in 30 grand or whatever, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, hey, we don't got enough to make the graphics and paint the truck. Come on, everybody, kick in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, it definitely wasn't a money venture.
Right,
for
right.
Sure.
Yeah, like your accountant probably was really wondering what was going on.
Yeah, you know, I remember when Nick wrote for us, he was doing really well. I mean, that was the year you were with us.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe Hamlin was on Suzuki or somebody got hurt.
Yeah, the whole Suzuki team got hurt, and everybody did. And, yeah, Nick was going to go there. It was a tense couple of weeks there.
Yeah, you know, and I guess what, Roger's retiring now? Is that the deal?
No, he's going to KTM.
That's for real?
Yeah.
Sure, they must be offering him some big money.
Yeah, or Suzuki's money is going away, one of the two.
Yeah. So I remember being on the phone with the Suzuki higher-ups and Nick and everybody trying to sort it out because we didn't want to keep Nick away from a good opportunity, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Nick's a good guy. He's a friend. And that's one thing that our team had first and foremost is we're friends. You know, if something happens, great. You know, we don't want to hold anybody back.
Right.
But at that point, we had about $60,000 invested into Nick, you know, like...
Yeah.
Getting him to and from races, and it was halfway through the Supercross race, and Roger was all up our ass about releasing Nick, and he wouldn't pay a penny for like, it's like, all right, dude, you can have Nick. We want to hold him back, but you got to reimburse us for our expenses. We're a small company, and we don't have money.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't pay. And I thought that was such an insult to Nick and to us, you know, like.
And to me, I would have been out of a job.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're the big powerhouse. Think you could just come in and pull a rider away?
Well, they still do,
you know,
that,
and not,
Smelly.
And not have any kind of repercussions or whatever it may be.
Yeah, you know, they still do that.
That put a bad taste in my mouth of what the factory higher-ups think of the smaller teams.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. They still do. I mean, it doesn't really matter whether you're a Valley Yamaha or you know, whatever, Subway Honda or whoever was out there. I mean, yeah, you're not getting the respect, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah.
But,
and so ultimately, Nick understood where we were coming from, and he finished out the season with us, and I really respect him for doing that. That was a really good thing, and he got the factory right for the next couple of years.
Yep.
But in the meantime, like, Roger's saying, I want Nick. Nick's going to come over and finish out the season with us, and we're just taking him, and we're not going to reimburse you for all of your time and your effort and your money that you put in. I thought it was bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad it didn't happen because I was able to keep my job. But
yeah.
And he went on to get top privateer that year in the Supercross series. So
did he?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did he finish, like sixth or something?
Seventh, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, seventh. So he got a check for 25 grand at the banquet, you know?
Nice.
I have the fake paper check on my wall here. I took it to the bank that takes big checks, but the big check department, but they didn't seem to care.
You watched Happy Gilmore one too many times.
No, that was Will Ferrell, basketball movie, Semi-Pro.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Oh, yeah. So really, you're still a fan, though. You're still going all the races. You hit the ones you can, I guess, in between tours, in between doing whatever rock stars do. But it's cool to see you there. What do you think of the season we had with Stewart and Reed and getting hurt and Dungy winning?
Oh, man. You know, like, Dungy, good for him. He's a powerhouse. He worked hard for sure.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm totally freaking wrong, but it seems like there's a handful of guys that worked their ass off, and then everybody else is just kind of coasting along.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, like, with the Stewart thing, with the Supercross only, and then him griping because he didn't get invited to the Motocross of the Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, dude. Pull your head out of your ass. You haven't fucking raced in the U.S. for almost a year, and you expect to go represent us?
Right.
You know, like, there's a pussification thing going on in the sport today. Like, people get all uptight if there's a block pass.
They do. You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, man, when I was racing, even though I didn't race at the pro level,
yeah,
if you left the door open, you got your clock cleaned, and that was all part of it.
Yeah, or if you talk to any of the pros that did race at the high level, they'll tell you the same thing. It was the same way back then, you know?
If someone hit you, you hit them back, you know? Yeah. And it was a respectable thing, you know?
Right.
So there's like a pussification thing going on, and you know, it's a shame that the higher-ups don't pay enough money to get all the big guys out to the Nationals, because that's where the real men are, you know,
yeah.
I think. The Nationals are gnarly.
Right.
But it's also sends a bad message, like, you know, Stewart and Reed or whoever. Mm-hmm. I know Reed raced the outdoors last year, and this year too. But, you know, like, picking and choosing where they're going to come and go, you know, it's just...
Right.
You know, that's not what the sport is.
Favorite rider that you had on your team?
On my team, personality or racing?
Either one, just all-around package, or both, or whatever. Just favorite rider, best guy.
Travis Preston.
We just had him on our show on Monday night, and he made us all laugh many times.
Him and I, you know, we used to hang out a lot and go snowboarding and stuff, and he was good on a bike. Oh, but yeah, favorite rider, but also the most pissed off I ever got of a rider, too.
Really? How come?
Because in, what was it, Minneapolis? Did they separate in Minneapolis?
Yes, we
Milwaukee?
Did. Yep, Minneapolis. You're getting your tours mixed up.
Yeah, I remember I flew up there with him. It was just me and him, and I don't know who his mechanic was at the time. I don't remember.
Sean Ulikowski would have been his mechanic.
Was it Shawnee?
Yep.
Okay, so me and him and Shawnee were up there, just us three. Main event, Travis is in third place on the last lap. And he let a pro circuit guy go by. So
he did?
Because he didn't want to piss Mitch off.
Really? That doesn't seem like Preston. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm all, dude, what was up with that? He goes, you know, I just didn't want to get in the way. You know, because he maybe was looking for a ride next year at pro circuit or something.
Uh-huh.
He let the guy by. At least that's what he alluded to me. I mean, maybe my perception is different than what, you know. But
so
I mean,
you lost it on him? You got mad?
I didn't say anything to him, but I was
right.
Like, wow, you just gave up a podium?
Yeah.
Just gave it up.
Yeah, and bonuses from Suzuki and O'Neill and everybody else. Yeah,
you know, I mean, that wow, because he was, for Supercross, man, he was good.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he was for sure. What about one rider that you just never got along with or didn't gel with or didn't work out or whatever? Was there one guy?
I got along pretty good with everybody. I never really got to know Larry Ward that well, and to be honest, I was like always like a little intimidated. Like I'd go into the box van of the semi or whatever that we had, and he'd just be sitting there, and I'd be thinking inside like, oh my God, that's Larry Ward, you know?
So
I was always like, hey Larry, what you doing? how was it out there? You know? You know, so I always felt a little weird around him.
You're the owner, but yet you're a fan, right, when you're around him?
Yeah. Because first and foremost, that's why we started, because we're fans of the sport, you know?
Right.
You know, Kyle's a good guy. He's a little hard to read sometimes, a little intense sometimes.
Yeah, he was there at Moto Triple X, oh, God, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years?
I think 2000 was his first season, maybe 2001.
Yeah, no, 99 when he came back. No, maybe he just did a few races. Yeah, 2000.
99 was Preston and Lawrence.
Yeah, Factory Phil. And
he's good to hang out with, man.
Oh,
he was a good guy. Yeah, he was a great guy. That's another one we forgot to throw out there.
Phil Lawrence, another guy.
Yeah, but for the most part, I got along really well with everybody.
Yeah, you're a pretty good guy, and you know, I can't imagine you making too many enemies or anything like that. It's quite a legacy. We need to do something, a t-shirt or a story or.
I was thinking about that too. Like when it's like we were okay, it's officially dead.
Yeah. Jordan had a little trouble letting go, but.
Yeah, Jordan did. And I understand. I understand both points. You were just putting out there what was out there, and Jordan was just wanting to hang on to it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the time might be a little past now, but I was thinking at the time, like, maybe ask David for a full page and just kind of, like, have, like, a thank you very much. You know, this is the end of an era.
Yeah.
You know, but it's 2 years past, so maybe it's a little too late.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so. I don't know. Yeah, could be. So when you walk in the bits now and you look at Hart and Huntington, you just shake your head and think you're 10 years too early?
Yeah, kind of. And you know what? And we made a mistake.
What do you mean?
Our mistake was to think that we were more than just a good time in the pits.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had good results as a race.
Right.
At the races, but we figured that if we kind of started flying a little more straight, then maybe we could draw in more sponsorship money.
And that was the thing. And that was the thing with the X3, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what it ended up doing was just kind of taking us off the radar.
Yeah.
You know? So it was counterproductive. And, you know, we were just trying a different angle. We were just trying to go, I guess, more straight, more corporate, more race team. And what we were offering, what the crowd wanted, you know, and it was all trial and error.
Right.
And Hart Huntington, since Watson was with us for the first couple of years, you know, he saw that what worked and what didn't, you know.
Right.
You know, and I heard Kenny or maybe Kerry, someone, I heard someone say, we're not going to be first in the track, but we're going to be first in the pits.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. And I wish I would have had that motto all along, except for, you know, At one point, we're like, oh, okay, well, if we get rid of the Triple X and we, you know, wear all the same kind of pit gear, maybe we'll get more money as sponsors. No, man, it didn't work. It kind of backfired.
It got it back. Did you guys entertain some talks to get more help from an OEM? Like, was it ever close to happening, or did it ever, like, was an OEM ever close to coming on board and really supporting it?
Well, Honda did.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Never mind.
Honda. Right. At one point, gave us a bunch of bikes, you know.
Yeah.
For a couple seasons, and that was fucking. That actually made me feel like, okay, now we're really established. When Honda, the biggest manufacturer there is, was giving us bikes.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Favorite year, Triple X. Was there one favorite year? Maybe the first one.
First year was phenomenal. The second year was definitely probably my least favorite year.
Yeah. Why?
Because we had a bunch of guys that could barely make the main, and there was just kind of drama, and, you know, it just didn't hold up to the first year.
Although Curry's box van burning down was pretty good.
Yeah, that was kind of gnarly, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was exciting.
And the second year, I don't know if it was karma or what, second year we got our box van broken into and everything stolen, and then the other one burnt down.
Oh, really?
You know?
You got stolen?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, in Georgia, I think. Was there a race in Georgia?
Atlanta,
Georgia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Gothic J. Kenny's told that story on our show a few times.
Yeah, a few times. Has it changed much in between times?
It changed a little bit. Yeah, it did. Yeah, no, for sure. It's funny just seeing Watson and knowing that he was doing all that back then, and now he's doing it again and trying to hold himself together, which is...
I love Watson, but man, that guy's a character.
Yeah, no, he's a character and a half. That's why he works so good on this internet radio show.
Yeah. So favorite years, every year is a favorite year for the most part, man. As long as we showed up.
Yeah.
And I could go and sit in the stands and watch and, you know, be stoked that our guys made the name.
Yeah.
And we never had the policy of, you got to be top 10, you got to be top 5, you know, any of that kind of crap.
Right.
It was just, we're trying our hardest, so we want you to try our hardest. So there was a few times when any of the riders weren't giving it all.
Right.
And, it hurts. It pisses me off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I know that somebody was giving it all and was appreciative, mm-hmm. it made it that much better.
You always struck me as a guy. You weren't. I mean, there's some owners out there that are pretty gnarly. You know, and you haven't. You had a lot of financial investment in the team, but you never struck me as an owner. You were just happy to be there, man.
Yeah, because I almost felt like I was racing myself. You know, since I didn't have those opportunities as a kid, it was.
Yeah.
I was living my dreams vicariously through other riders. You know.
Right. Yeah. No.
You know,
for sure.
So like I said, I was just happy to be there, and Larry Ward sitting in the back of the truck and be, oh shit, that's Larry Ward. You know.
Right. Getting back to the rock and roll world or punk, but biggest star you've ever hung out with.
Biggest star I've ever hung out with.
Yeah. Rock star.
Gwen Stefani, maybe?
Oh, yeah? Hung out with her?
Yeah, quite a few times. I'm friends with all those guys in the band. I'm not really so much friends with her, but I've hung out and gone to dinner with them and stuff.
Orange County?
She lives in Beverly Hills now, but from Orange County.
Yeah. Would that be the most famous person in your cell phone, Smelly?
Most famous person? Kenny Watson's the most famous person on my cell phone.
You don't actually have his number, do you?
Yeah, I think I do. I don't know, man. Maybe he's got it shut off. Maybe he's had a couple different numbers since then, but I do have a Watson number.
Whatever happened with Watson at the end? Didn't he just quit? Or did he get fired? What happened at the end?
I don't... You know, man, it's...
I think he got in a fight with Jordan, didn't he?
He was always a dick to Jordan, man, because they were roommates, too, and he was always a freaking asshole to Jordan.
I thought there was a story about throwing ice cream on Jordan and then quitting.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, Watson, I don't want to throw him under the bus more than I already have.
No, you can. But, he'll be fine with
you
it.
You know, there were some, like, discrepancies with monies. Not saying that he stole anything, but, like, you know, stealing from one pocket to pay another pocket kind of a deal.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember if he quit or if he got fired. I'm going to have to say he quit because maybe we were, like, questioning him about it, and he got the, well, fuck you then, I quit attitude.
Right, well, you know, I'm going to play this on our Monday show. I'm going to play this clip, and we'll have his side of the story, and he can tell us the end of it.
Yeah, please do. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Because I don't really remember, but I'm sure he has, like, has a great story behind it.
Yeah, as always. So you're done now, done touring, done drumming for 6 months. Till January.
Not 6 months, till 3 months, till the middle of
I thought you said January. Oh, okay. I thought you said
No, we go to Australia in December and then January.
Shit. It is the beginning of the year. It is September already.
Yeah, September what, 2nd?
I guess so. Hey, what's the biggest crowd you've ever played in front of?
250,000 people.
Where?
Over there someplace. I don't know, England? No, not England. Someplace in Europe, because every summer they have, there's huge festivals out there. There's this festival, like, just festival season, where there's festivals in all these countries, and they're just big, big, big shows, and the biggest one, 250,000 people.
Wow. I meant to tell you, last time I saw you was Vegas Supercross. You and I were chatting for a little while. I finally saw Anvil, the story of Anvil.
What a movie.
What an awesome movie. Yeah. Incredible. Huh?
Yeah. Like, and those guys are touring now.
Did they make it because of that movie? Are they back? Well, like,
I don't know if make it is the right word.
Okay, all right.
They're playing shows, and they probably have just as few people showing up now as they did back then.
Oh, okay. So they didn't really make it big. They're on tour, though. No. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're just kind of, I don't know. It's... For all those listening, you want to see a sad and funny movie about the music industry and about people holding on to their dreams and not letting go.
Yeah.
Because eventually you should let go of your dreams if it's not going to happen. God, that sounds really bad.
Yeah. I guess you're not going to make a career as a motivational speaker.
Yeah. You suck. Crawl in your bedroom and just die.
Right. But you could probably relate to some of that, huh? Some of those gigs and some of those things that are half-assed done and like you're like, where are we?
We still have that. Like, when we go to third world countries where we've never been before, like, we'll show up and we'll go like, what? I remember one show in Brazil, the building had no power, so what happened was some kid climbed up a telephone pole with an extension cord, spliced it, and was just hard tapping it onto the power pole
to
run the show. You know, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, the kid could have shocked, I mean, should have, by all means, become fried chicken.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's just stories after stories after stories of just stuff like, Wow, this is sketchy.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. You got any openings for like a roadie or something? Can I go on a European tour with you guys?
No.
Okay.
Not gonna happen. Right. You stick in the motorcycle world.
How many people go with you on tour? How many? I mean, you must have a regular set of guys, right?
Yeah, we have a regular set of guys. The band and the crew, everybody is 9 people.
Really? And it's the same 9 forever? Like
the same 9 forever. Wow. We have 4 guys in the band, a tour manager/sound guy, drum tech, guitar tech, you know, yeah, I mean, there's 9 of us total.
That's it, huh? Wow.
Yeah. It's small, and we do things kind of half-assed, but it works.
Right. You get recognized a lot on the street and stuff? How's that go?
No, rarely. Yeah. I mean, yesterday I was in Trader Joe's buying something, and somebody that works there was like, hey, dude, hey, you're in NoFX. but rarely.
Right. Okay. Because I was just trying to think of you on a celebrity factor on how big this is for me.
Not very big.
I'm kidding. Well, cool. Hey, man, thank you for doing this. It's been a lot of fun. And I really want to educate people and realize the story behind the story of Moto Triple X, you know? And I know you guys are fans, first and foremost. And what you did was super cool and how it lasted, and I'm proud to have been a part of it. And I just think it's just a really cool story. So.
Well, thank you, Steven. I'm glad you're a part of it as well.
Oh, thanks, buddy. When will I see you next? Probably Anaheim, right?
Yeah, probably. Or Dodger Stadium this year, too.
Yeah, Dodger Stadium. That's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah, it's exciting. I was born and raised right by Dodger Stadium, so it's kind of cool. I mean, that's Supercross and Dodger Stadium. And Dodgers are my favorite baseball team, so that's awesome.
Man. And it's probably close to your house?
Well, I live in Long Beach right now, but it's very close to where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
Minutes away from where I grew up.
You're in Long Beach, probably right on the water.
I'm about, honestly, right now, I'm about 300 yards from the water.
Oh, God, love it. Well, cool, man.
Where do you live?
I live in Vegas. I think I told you that.
That's right. That sucks.
I'm 300 miles from, no, 600 miles from the water, probably. I need to, apparently you can be in a multi-million record-selling band by never actually taking any drum lessons, so maybe it's too late for me. I don't know, but I need to start.
it's just one beat slow and fast. That's all I know how to do. Is I only know one beat.
Hey, well, actually, let me ask. Did you have a real job for a while? Like, when did you stop having a real job?
Dude, I've had so many real jobs. The last time I had a real job though was like 1991. But I grew up working in factories, and I worked for the LA Weekly. You know that newspaper, the LA Weekly.
Yeah.
I worked there for 3 years, working as in the art department as some like little delivery boy. Slave guy, but yeah, no, I've had real jobs for sure.
Yeah, okay, all right, but around 91 when you guys first sold however many records,
that's when we started making a living. Like, we could go on tour and we could make like $600 a show and divide it up, and I'd walk away with $150, you know.
And then so $150 times what, 60 shows or 80 shows, and that'd be money to live on.
You know, it adds up.
right. Well, cool, man. Yeah, thanks again for doing this. I appreciate it. And Eric, we will see you down the road somewhere. And
cool, man.
Congratulations on everything you've done. And yeah.
Thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it. And Steve, I really respect everything you've done for the sport, too.
Aw, thanks, buddy.
All right, dude.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as...
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The daughter, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. And I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled the pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this friend up in the atmosphere. Another